Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution, newcomer and returning member meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of the individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, is Leslie Kay from Oregon. She's a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence and has recovered through the directions in the Big Book and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what Leslie has shared. So let's welcome Leslie. Once again, she is a compulsive overeater from Oregon.
Thank you so much, Jessica, and thank you everyone for being here on a, this is Sunday, right? On a Sunday afternoon in Oregon and a Sunday evening on the East Coast, and in the Midwest, I guess it's like it's up for grabs. I don't even know the time zones that well because of Arizona. It messes me up. My name is Leslie, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm very grateful to be here. I have to tell you that when I saw on WhatsApp, Davila was kind enough to do the service and put it out there that this meeting was happening. I felt slightly nauseous knowing that. That might bring more people to this meeting, but if you're new, you're in the right place because I'm just here as a member among members. I am here with you, whether you're new or a old timer. I'm here with you. We all have 24 hours. That's the absolute bottom line for me. We all have 24 hours. And if you were binging until this moment today, you get to start right now. That's what I did many times in this program. I got here in 1980. I went to an in-house meeting on the west side of Los Angeles. And I had a group of really wonderful women that I went to this meeting with. They were very kind, very patient with me. I was in denial. I didn't want to surrender. I knew I was there and I needed to be there, but I just didn't feel like I was as desperate as they were. And yet I was desperate, but I didn't know it. I was just talking to another friend today in the program about the gift of denial. And I heard it many times when I was new that it is it's not a river in Egypt. It is active and well and living in me. And I can slip into denial so quickly. It's scary to me. And today, I feel like I have a new pair of glasses. If you've read that book, it's a wonderful book by Chuck C. And it's just part of the journey. It's the failures and the wins and the abstinent years that fly by. And the binging and purging days that feel like they last forever. That's my story. It's not a straight line. I have had many, many years of abstinence, and I've had many years of failed relapses. I've had so many 30, 60, 90, 6 months, 9 months, and a year. Over and over, I've been able to capture those amounts of time. And if you're new, those are significant numbers for people like us, like me, because 30, 60, 90, those days, those early days, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 30, 60, 90, 6 months, 9 months, and a year. Those are significant times where I found myself in the physical withdrawal from the substances that I put in my body. And I count sugar and gluten as substances that create the phenomenon of craving. One of the great moments for me in the big book is the description of the phenomenon of craving and the mental twist. Because I haven't had these substances in my body now for 33 months this time. And so I know better than to believe that it is the phenomenon of craving when I have a disturbance. I know better because I've been in these rooms and I believe what you have told me, that if I have really put down my alcoholic foods and I have not picked them up for 33 months, then I do not experience the phenomenon of craving today. What I am experiencing is the mental twist. That thing that tells me that I am not good enough, that I can't do this, that I will fail again, because look at my history. I have failed so many times. That's not true, but that's the head. That's my head talking to me. Leslie, you have failed at this. And you know what? You weren't that bad. You weren't that bad. You've got this. You just needed a little tune-up. You know, I have said all of those things to myself over and over as I'm on that slippery slope toward relapse. And those are all lies of my disease. And my disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And this is a painful truth for me, because I want to believe I'm different in this area. I want to believe that I do not have to go deep like you do, for instance. You know, I want to believe that I'm special, that I'm going to have the freedom that I so desperately have longed for all of my life. I have wanted the freedom that I have today and that I have had for the last 33 months. But I just don't believe that I have to do this forever. That is what it was like for me every time I got abstinent. And I was abstinent 2 years in how, with squeaky clean abstinence. But one thing changed, and it was untenable. It was unsustainable. I moved out of Los Angeles, where there were hundreds of meetings a week, and I moved to this small little beautiful town called Ashland, Oregon. And all of a sudden, I was in the home of Shakespeare, but I was not in the home of Overeaters Anonymous or How. I'll tell you that. There were two meetings a week. And when those folded during COVID, I was lost. I had nowhere to turn, because within driving distance, everything was shut down, as you all know, because we've all lived through it. So I started combing the OA website, and I found Choose Your Own Conception. And there are women here tonight who know, because I recognize them from CYOC, and I'm very grateful that you're in both groups. Because without those other fellows who keep suiting up and showing up as a model, as a beacon, in those dreary days where the self-loathing returns to me, in those dreary days, when I know that I turn the camera on and I look you in the eye and I have that peace wash over me, knowing that we are swimming in the same river. Being clean and sober wasn't enough to give me freedom from the disturbance that I was feeling. It wasn't enough. And I've never relapsed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it wasn't enough. I couldn't feel the freedom that I feel when I am abstinent, clean, and sober. The minute I take back gluten, I am powerless. Powerless. And you know what? I have this little scale that this tiny little scale that I travel with. It's so cool. It's just smart way, you know. And when I'm traveling, I say to my partner, can I have this? I go into a blackout, even now, after all these years of being around these rooms and listening to you and sharing your food programs and understanding this disease. I'm not a cook, so I don't know where gluten might be hiding in something that I didn't cook, right? So we're in a restaurant and I say to my partner, can I have this? And she says, yeah, there's no gluten in that. And then I'll ask the waiter, is there any gluten in this? And the waiter will say, I'll go check with the chef. I check twice when I'm somewhere that I don't trust, because I know that people just go, if you're not a celiac, this is just like, you know, you're just somebody who wants it your way. You know, this is not McDonald's. You don't get to have, or burger, wherever that is. You don't get to have it your way, right? And they throw it on the stove and they make it. I'm not saying all restaurants do that, but I am suspicious. I'm deeply suspicious, as they said in A Little Night Music. I am suspicious that they're going to have my best interests at heart. They don't know me. I'm there for the taste of their food. That's what they think. And so they're going to give me what they believe the most delicious thing is that they can come up with. And that isn't good for me, and I know it. So I ask, and I ask. Ad nauseum, I ask. And I carry my scale. And I don't torture anybody. In these last 33 months, I have to tell you, I'm changed. I used to torture the people around me. No, I don't want it. It's okay. No, go ahead and have it. No problem. Not bugging me. Go ahead. You know, and everybody was like, oh God, I don't want to eat this in front of her. This isn't okay. But these last 33 months, I have neutrality like I've never had it before. Can you imagine having 2 years, 10 years, 30, 60, 96 months? Can you imagine having all that time? Even though it wasn't back to back, it was real time. But I had no neutrality. I always thought, I will have that again one day. I will eat that substance again. I don't believe that this time. I do not. I do not have the luxury to believe that. And why would I, when I have the freedom that I'm feeling today? It's such a simple thing to ask of me, and I have never been able to give it to myself until 33 months ago. Well, not quite. Sorry. No fronts. Today is, I'm looking at my calendar. Today's the 20, oh God, what is it? The 24th? Is today the 24th? Oh, okay. On the 26th, in 2 days, I'll have 33 months, but no fronts. I don't believe in fronts. It's just a round number. So I'll say 32, cause that's a round number too. So the phenomenon of craving, the mental twist. If you get nothing else from me today, I hope you will know that I sincerely believe that once I put down the food, I had a separation from that particular part of my disease. It doesn't mean I'm cured. Just because I say I'm recovered, I finally understand what recovered means. And because of the other program, we never say that. It's like voodoo. Oh, if you say you're recovered, you're going to relapse because your ego is involved. I don't believe that today. What you guys have taught me is what the big book says, which is we are recovered when we can take someone else through the 12 steps. And today I can take you through the 12 steps. And I can read the first 164 pages with you, and there isn't a single word in it that I haven't looked up. If I don't understand a word, I have this fabulous thing. It's not conference approved, so I can't talk about it. But if you want to call me, my number's on the screen. But it's a dictionary from 1935. And it helps me understand what they were thinking, because I don't understand all of the doggerel and some of the language in the big book, but I've looked up the words and I know what they mean. And if I'm taking you through the big book, I want you to know what they mean. They're magical. It's another time. It's like watching Outlander, you know? It's like you're dropped into this other land of mystery and magic. And in 1935, there was its own magical time. And if I look at it from that lens, instead of a resentful lens that all the white men ran the show, if I look it through the lens of it was a magical time because Alcoholics Anonymous was being formed, and that's how we came to be, Overeaters Anonymous. If I look at it through that lens, I have peace. And I don't have to fight the stuff that I don't understand. I can walk through it with you and we can figure it out together. That's a beautiful gift that you have given me. I know today that I am not alone. I see it. It's obvious to me. And by the way, anyone who's new and is off camera, I just want you to know the only reason we ask you your name is for the exact thing that happened when this meeting started and there was a bomber in the room. That's why we ask you to turn on your camera or just say who you are if you don't want to turn your camera on. It isn't to shame anybody or make anybody feel separate from, not at all. And it isn't a lockstep program. You do not have to conform or do it my way. Your way is plenty good enough if it works for you. But if you're still in the food, what I'm saying tonight is when I was in the food, I didn't have the solution. I had to surrender my best ideas and my best thinking to the people who came before me. And that, you know, I have to drop my ego. I've been in the program a long time. That doesn't mean that I've been able to maintain my abstinence. So where's my ego when I think, yeah, well, I've been here a lot longer than that person. You know, see me in 5 years. No, I don't feel that way today. Every woman that's in this room that has one day, I can have a conversation with, and we can laugh together, and we can feel our feelings together, and we can understand one another. Because if you have a day off of your drug of choice, you know the same thing that I know. And that is, there is freedom on the other side of that compulsive bite. I always say to the newcomer when I do an outreach call, freedom is on the way. And when I do a fellowship group, I always ask before we hang up, are you tucked in? I want to know if you're tucked in, because I sold cars for a while when I was young. And the dealership, they would say, oh, this customer is not tucked in. You got to go back. The deal's going to unwind on you. You're going to lose the deal. You got to tuck them in. Tuck them in. And, you know, and they'd use this like, you know, you're making a military bed or something. It was insane. But I've never forgotten that phrase, are you tucked in? Because what that means to me in my recovery is I'm secure. I can walk out of this meeting tonight with humility and confidence that I won't take a compulsive bite tonight, because you shore me up. You give me a feeling that I'm not alone, that I don't have to do this by myself, and that I could call any woman on this screen who gives me her phone number, and you would listen if I said, I was wrong. I wanna eat compulsively. You would listen. I know it. I know. I have never made an outreach call where someone has said, I don't know what you're talking about. It just hasn't happened to me. And I'll be conservative and say hundreds of outreach calls. Every time I call anybody, it's an outreach call. So wonderful. It's so wonderful to be with you. I feel like Mr. Rogers. You know, this is our neighborhood. It's just a beautiful place. It's a beautiful neighborhood. And that bomber, you know, it's like, wow, nothing better to do on a Sunday afternoon. You know, it's okay. They're hitting their bottom. It's okay. You know, they're suffering. That's what I believe. I could be an evangelical about this. I believe that bombers are suffering, and no one can convince me otherwise. I did my share of shaming people when I was young for various things, and I was suffering. I know what that feels like, to go after someone who you feel might be a little weaker than you are. I know what that is. That is suffering. And I don't have to do that today. If you call me and you're suffering, I will drop in with you. And we will together, hopefully, look for a solution. Because there is a solution. It is in the first 164 pages of this book. This worn out, tattered fourth edition, you know, my third edition doesn't have a cover. So my sponsor has a second edition and I covet it. I have to tell you, I covet her second edition, but she's not ready to give it up. So I'm just waiting for my book to fall apart and then maybe I'll take action. I had to make a decision. And that's in the doctor's opinion, which I love. I love the doctor's opinion because I just had to make a decision. You know, it's up to me. It's not up to you. I can't carry you on my back and you certainly can't carry me. But if I make the decision, then we can walk alongside each other. And I love that. Right now, everyone in this meeting is walking alongside of me. I know it. I can feel it. You haven't hung up. You're still here. You know, we have 31 people who are looking for the solution or who are reinforcing their solution. And the newcomer is looking for the solution or has found the solution as reinforcing the solution for the second meeting of the day or the third meeting of the day or whatever it takes. Because okay, I'm not ashamed to tell you. I don't know why I hesitated, but I go to 10 meetings a week. And in between the two programs, I go to a lot of meetings a week. And when I retired, I thought, how am I going to be relevant? How am I going to find something to fill my days with? And it was right in front of me the whole time because I've gone to meetings my whole life. But being retired, I start at 7 in the morning and I go to a live meeting. And then I go to a 9 o'clock Zoom meeting where I have a GSR commitment. And I have a service sponsor. And we don't talk a lot about the concepts in Overeaters Anonymous, but you know, the service sponsors are really a beautiful thing to give yourself. It is for me. I never have had a service sponsor in all these years. And I took a service sponsor this year. And We're going through the concepts, the 12 traditions and the concepts together. And I'm learning things I didn't know that I didn't know. Isn't that the way it works? I didn't know that. It's like, okay, show me, teach me. I'm teachable today. My sponsor used to say to me, and she's passed, so that's why I say she used to. And I miss her. I miss her. She used to say to me, no matter what my disturbance was, she would say, Leslie, take 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, and 11. 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, and 11. And she'd hang up. And I listened to a sponsor say, we've all heard the click, and so she'd click, she'd hang up. And she'd say, she'd say, call me after you take 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, and 11, click. So I was so frustrated because I wanted her to hear me whine and pule. I wanted her to hear why I was disturbed. I have a legitimate reason. If you'll just listen to me, you'll understand why I have this legitimate excuse to be whining right now. But she wouldn't have it. She wouldn't listen to that. She wanted me to get into the solution. 1, 2, 3. And she gave me a shortcut to 1, 2, and 3. 1, I'm powerless. 2, came to believe. 3, made a decision. I can apply that to any disturbance that I have. I'm powerless. I came to believe. I made a decision. I can apply that to anything that comes my way during a day. And then the 6 and 7, and somebody reminded me that just before this meeting, I was perseverating a little, I have to say. And she reminded me that this is not, I don't remember, I can't remember what she said, a show, or this is not a contest or something to do with ego. And that's right, it is not. And thank you for that reminder. Because it's just one compulsive overeater talking to another, one compulsive overeater sharing experience, strength, and hope. How did I get into the solution? How did I recapture the magic when I've lost it so many times? How did I recapture that magic? And I have to say that when I was sitting in those meetings at CYOC and seeing the same people Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Back then it was 4 nights a week, now it's three. But 3 of those nights were speaker meetings and just hammering away at the big book. And then working with a sponsor who hammered away at the big book. And then doing the fourth and fifth with that sponsor, and she hammered away at the big book. And would not let me tell her the details of any of my disturbances, I realized there's something here to pay attention to because I've always been able to whine and pule. Everybody's let me whine and pule. But one of the first old timers that came up to me said, Leslie, honey, I just shared. She says, honey, you can whine and pule all you want. It's okay. We'll listen. But just leave us with a little hope.
2 minutes.
Perfect. Because that's it. That's the story right there. It's get into the solution, Leslie. Get into the solution. Right? Because the story means nothing. I spent 17 years working in the domestic violence community with women who had lost their children to Department of Human Services. And they had no hope. They were addicted to methamphetamine, and they were gaining weight like mad because they couldn't do the meth. And it was a real challenging time. And in the domestic violence community, the most recent thinking is don't revisit the story of the violence. Tell it once and then don't tell it again. And that's what I got from my sponsor when we did the fourth and fifth. She said, I don't want to hear the details of your story. Tell me the way it's laid out in the big book. And then let's focus on the fourth column of the fourth step, because that's where your part comes in. And once we can tease apart your part, you'll begin to have some freedom. And she was right. I have never experienced anything like it when I finally stopped. I dropped the rock. I carried a boulder from drop the rock meeting. I carried a little boulder about this big. I had to sleep with it and carry it and take it to all my meals and take it everywhere because it was a drop the rock meeting. And finally, when I was done whining, they let me put the rock back in the middle of the table and someone else had to take it that week. But I kept it for a week and I carried that thing around as extra weight to remind me that when I'm not in the solution, I'm in the problem. And if I'm in the problem, I am probably eating because I am trying to tamp down something that is causing the disturbance. So if you're new, I hope you stay. Thank you so much for letting me share. Nicole, thank you for your service. Jessica, thank you for asking me. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much, Leslie.